Chris Stone, you have a very solid name. Rock solid, right?
That's exactly correct.
And it's good for somebody in your position because you steer the Convention and Visitors Bureau of Greenville, South Carolina, and you've done a wonderful job getting attention to this city.
Well, we've just done a terrific job here, and to be honest with you, what you're seeing in our downtown is about 35 years in the making, and a place that I think importantly we created for ourselves. We did not create this for visitors or for other people from out of town. It was a place that we decided that we wanted to make better, and we've added components over the years, and it's now to a point where those components are so good that we are delighted by the fact that we have friends and visitors and business associates from out of town, and people have such delightful things to say about.
You get
the
a lot of ink on how wonderful it is. It's not exactly a secret anymore, is it?
I think what's unusual here is we have been able to pull off what a lot of people might dream or think about we've been able to do. And so there is very much a European feel to the downtown that is a proper human scale in terms of height.
It's a wonderful scale.
And I think a real pedestrian stroll, if you want to put it that way, of homegrown shops and restaurants and attractions that are unique to our place. And so what we've seen, certainly across the United States in many cases, is the homogenization of place, meaning that so many places are just like the one you just experienced. And in our case, we've really created something that is unusual, distinctive, and different.
Now, tell us about, because we're going to be talking a lot about euphoria. How does that fit into this overall picture of developed, redeveloped, and rising star Greenville?
Well, I think euphoria fits it in several ways. Number one is I refer a lot to Greenville as an emerging destination.
Unlike
some of our sister neighboring friends, Asheville, Charleston, Hilton Head, Myrtle Beach, which are long-time tourism destinations. We're an emerging one. We're a new one. So we're fresh from that standpoint. The other thing is, as I just mentioned, the European feel, the strolling of downtown and the quaintness of it, the town-like spirit that we have here. So I think the combination of that really fits well with euphoria, which includes not only some dining opportunities inside restaurants, but a lot of activities that take place outside and on our streets, much like you would see, again, in the great European cities. It's an eclectic mix of bringing together tremendous chef and culinary talent, along with, because we've got Edwin McCain hooked into it on the music side, you get the combination of food, drink, and music, which is certainly fits then Greenville in a very big way.
That's great.
Now, there are events that go on every week, right? So we mustn't ignore the Thursday night bash that takes place by the Reedy River every Thursday evening.
I think another spot that Greenville has been very successful in, and that any place of significant size needs its own locals to be active in its core. And Greenville's start, I think, mostly had to do with what I mentioned earlier about our citizenry engagement. But our citizenry, in this case, is extended to our region. And so let's just take the 40 or 50 mile radius. You know, this really is the place where people come to shop and dine and have their entertainment. And so these weekly events that take place on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday nights are and have been participated by the local area, who comes and supports these events that then when visitors come to town, you know, they're just engaging with what the locals do, which is what all of us as visitors want to do anyway, is to engage with what the locals do. So we have now many years of dedicated support for these weekly events that have grown in popularity. And of course, people want to be where other people are. And so the more people that show up, the more the electricity, the more fun, the more fanfare. And so those have taken on a life of their own.
So once a year, Euphoria takes it all to a new level altogether. And I guess people come from all over the country and outside the country as well, we expect.
Yeah, I think what Euphoria does is it definitely takes it to the next level. It takes the highest level of talent, again, from the culinary standpoint and from musical talent standpoint, and it takes Greenville, if you will, as the backdrop, the stage, and puts on an event then on a very wonderful stage that makes it its own unique flair.
So come on down, everybody. Come to Euphoria in Greenville at the end of September, and you can say hello to Chris, and you can say hello to some of the other friends who are going to be on today's program. Chris, thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
Thank you, and we'd be delighted to have everyone come down and take a look at us.
Chris Stone, you have a very solid name. Rock solid, right?
That's exactly correct.
And it's good for somebody in your position because you steer the Convention and Visitors Bureau of Greenville, South Carolina, and you've done a wonderful job getting attention to this city.
Well, we've just done a terrific job here, and to be honest with you, what you're seeing in our downtown is about 35 years in the making, in a place that I think importantly we created for ourselves. We did not create this for visitors or for other people from out of town. It was a place that we decided that we wanted to make better. And we've added components over the years, and it's now to a point where those components are so good that we are delighted by the fact that we have friends and visitors and business associates from out of town, and people have such delightful things to say about.
You get
the
a lot of ink on how wonderful it is. It's not exactly a secret anymore, is it?
I think what's unusual here is we have been able to pull off what a lot of people might dream or think about, we've been able to do. And so there is very much a European feel to the downtown that is a proper human scale in terms of height.
It's a wonderful scale.
And I think a real pedestrian stroll, if exactly. You want to put it that way, of homegrown shops and restaurants and attractions that are unique to our place. And so what we've seen certainly across the United States in many cases is the homogenization of place, meaning that so many places are just like the one you
right.
just experienced. And in our case, we've really created something that is unusual, distinctive, and different.
Now, tell us about, because we're going to be talking a lot about Euphoria. How does that fit into this overall picture of developed, redeveloped, and rising star Greenville?
Well, I think Euphoria fits it in several ways. Number one is I refer a lot to Greenville as an emerging destination.
Unlike
some of our sister neighboring friends, Asheville, Charleston, Hilton Head, Myrtle Beach, which are long-time tourism destinations. We're an emerging one. We're a new one. So we're fresh from that standpoint. The other thing is, as I just mentioned, the European feel, the strolling of downtown and the quaintness of it, the town-like spirit that we have here. So I think the combination of that really fits well with Euphoria, which includes not only some dining opportunities inside restaurants, but a lot of activities that take place outside and on our streets, much like you would see, again, in the great European cities. It's an eclectic mix of bringing together tremendous chef and culinary talent, along with, because we've got Edwin McCain hooked into it on the music side, you get the combination of food, drink, and music, which is certainly fits then Greenville in a very big way.
That's great.
Now, there are events that go on every week, and so we mustn't ignore the Thursday night bash that takes place by the Reedy River every Thursday evening.
I think I think another spot that Greenville has been very successful in, and that any place of significant size needs its own locals to be active in its core. And Greenville's start, I think, mostly had to do with what I mentioned earlier about our citizenry engagement. But our citizenry, in this case, is extended to our region. And so let's just take the 40 or 50 mile radius. You know, this really is the place where people come to shop and dine and have their entertainment. And so these weekly events that take place on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday nights are and have been participated by the local area, who comes and supports these events, that then when visitors come to town, you know, they're just engaging with what the locals do, which is what all of us as visitors want to do anyway, is to engage with what the locals do. So we have now many years of dedicated support for these weekly events that have grown in popularity. And of course, people want to be where other people are. And so the more people that show up, the more the electricity, the more fun, the more fanfare. And so those have taken on a life of their own.
So once a year, euphoria takes it all to a new level altogether. And I guess people come from all over the country and outside the country as well, we expect.
Yeah, I think what euphoria does is it definitely takes it to the next level. It takes the highest level of talent, again, from the culinary standpoint and from musical talent standpoint, and it takes Greenville, if you will, as the backdrop, the stage, and puts on an event then on a very wonderful stage that makes it its own unique flair.
So come on down, everybody. Come to Euphoria in Greenville at the end of September. And you can say hello to Chris, and you can say hello to some of the other friends who are going to be on today's program. Chris, thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
Thank you, and we'd be delighted to have everyone come down and take a look at us.
Part of what we want to set out right now is, we've heard so many stories, who exactly is the real Carl Sovosinski? Hi, Carl.
Hi, Anne. How are you?
Okay. I have it here that you were the founder of Euphoria. Now you tell me you're a Yankee. You were an architecture student and not a restaurateur.
That's correct.
But you now have a series of restaurants under the group Table 301. What is your story here?
I think I'm just a little bit of a dreamer and an entrepreneur, and I thought I wanted to go to school to study architecture. I did end up delving into that and graduating with that, but found out through bartending and waiting tables that this life was much more suited for me.
Ah, so you set out then to be a restaurateur.
Yeah, I think once I graduated and completed school, then I knew that getting in the restaurant business was what I wanted to do.
But you've repurposed so many buildings in downtown Greenville. I can say that you have an architect's sensibility, I believe.
Well, that would make Mom and Dad proud to know that their money was well spent in some ways. And probably my professors at Clemson, that they have come into the restaurants and recognized that we've done a great job with restoring the integrity of the buildings. And that's important in what we do. We want to, in taking an old renovated building, we want to restore it to its original design and then try to create food and experiences around that whole package.
Now, Euphoria sounds like such a well-organized, well-oiled machine now, and it will appear that way, listeners, as you go through today's program, but it really didn't start out that way, did it? It started out with just a chance conversation one day?
It really was. It was a conversation between Edwin and myself over dinner, and really with the premise behind it of creating an event where we could collectively bring our resources to the table and do something that people enjoyed, hopefully make some money at it, and then distribute that money amongst the very worthwhile charities in town.
So you, until that time, you were dying the death of a thousand cuts with everybody calling every day saying, please do my event, and Edwin was getting the same thing?
That's pretty much the way it goes, although we still get the phone calls every day and the
requests. I was going to ask you, why all of a sudden would they stop then?
Yeah, it's probably actually opened up more doors and more folks feeling that they should call and solicit our help, which is, it's all fine. I mean, it's a wonderful community, and we're happy to be here and to be able to do the business that we do in this town as well as raise families.
Yeah, and you said that it started out as one thing, this community event, raising some money for charity, and now it's a totally different concept, really.
It is. It's we've realized that we can. We spoke earlier about Aspen Food and Wine Classic and the South Beach Food and Wine event. Both of those wonderful events, but we recognize Greenville doesn't have the same cachet as Aspen or South Beach. But those of us that live here and people that come and visit for business or pleasure just love our town, and they think it's a real treasure. So many of us have become somewhat tired of our town being a sleepy little town, and we want the rest of the world to start to know about it. So through this event, Euphoria, and our goal of raising some money and giving it to charity, we recognized it was also an excellent opportunity to bring people from around the country and to promote tourism here, as well as not just the consumer that's coming for the experience, but the guest chefs, the musicians, and the winemakers that come.
Why the name Euphoria? It was called something else to start with.
It was Southern Exposure, and I'm just going to defer to the all our marketing brains behind it that make us change our name every 3 years. Now, Euphoria fits. It has there's a lot of fun things we can do with it. Southern Exposure maybe put us too much into a box of being Southern or focusing on Southern rock from the music side or Southern cuisine, and we didn't want to get pigeonholed into that box. We wanted to be able to explore various opportunities, and so coming up with a new name that was catchy and felt good, tied into the experience that the consumer was going to partake in, and then something that was fun.
How many people came last?
Well, we probably have about 4,000 people that experience the various parts of the event over the weekend. The goal for me personally would be to actually cut it back from 4,000 and find 1,000 people that would come and buy a ticket from Friday through Sunday.
Right.
And just come experience the entire thing. But it's been a great way for us to not only have the full weekend package, but to have things where people can just go on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. And that way more folks can get involved without a steep ticket price.
Now, what are some of the changes? I understand that the minute the 1 year's event is over, you all get together and analyze what was missing, what you want to add, what you want to take away. What have you changed? What will be new this year?
Well, one of the biggest things is Edwin on Thursday night opening up with a singer-songwriter event and bringing in three of his colleagues and doing a very small, to some degree, 150 folks in an intimate setting with Edwin and three other singer-songwriters. So that's a new added element. I think that each year what we want to do, because we do see repeat guests coming year after year, and it's great for them to see new chefs coming in and new musicians, but they're coming to the same city and they're dining in the same venues year after year. So we want to add elements to it, but then we also want to bring in new chefs and musicians so that each year they can come back and feel like it's different and it's stepped up and elevated from the year before.
Any other elements that people should be taking note of for this year?
I think the most important thing is, as I said earlier, we started out to raise money for charity, but the bottom line is the people that live and work in Greenville love Greenville, and we want folks to come and visit us and see what we're all about.
Well, they party here all the time. Actually, Thursday nights, Friday nights.
We do, and in the summer it starts on Wednesday.
And Wednesday too.
It's almost like a little college town without the college.
Oh, well, you have colleges here too.
We do. There's some small colleges.
Well, we just think it's a gem of a place, and if nothing else, just for people to come and experience how a community reinvents itself. It's just a lovely environment in all kinds of ways, physically and in every other way. I wanted to run out today, though. It was so hot, and get in that fountain.
There's one down below the Lazy Goat on the river. That
that's the one I was looking at.
Yeah, well, you should have jumped in it. It's perfectly suitable for
folks. She was planning to join all the little kiddie-winkies.
And the kids go in with their bathing suits and without.
And without, too. And the dogs.
Oh, yes.
Well, I thank you. We look forward to actually seeing and experiencing this event and having our own little piece of Euphoria.
Well, thank you. Can't wait to see you in September.
Thanks, Carl. We're going to venture into an area that I am certainly by no means an expert on, but we're talking to Edwin McCain, who is one of the founders of Euphoria here in Greenville, who is primarily a musician, a songwriter, and passionate about it as well, and a long time, do you call it a Grenvillian?
Yes, a Grenvillian, yeah.
Grenvillian. Now tell us, Edwin, you said this has been the only thing you've ever wanted to do your whole entire life. How long have you been doing it? How did you get into it?
I started like most Southern kids in church choir and got my first solo in front of the church and was bitten by the bug. And it was really as a kid, I had a lot of trouble in school, and it was the one thing that I was just really, I was good at.
So you've got a great voice.
I got a compelling voice. How about that? I don't know that it's great. I think I make the metaphor a lot is that my singing is very much like the guy that's late for the train and runs all the way down the platform and dives and grabs the last rung of the ladder and scrambles on board the train. It's not pretty, but it definitely can't take your eyes off of him. You know, he's running down that track. I mean, trying to keep up with the train. So I'm just barely hanging on to the last rung. And I think that's kind of where soul music lives. And I love that part of music. I like being a part of music that requires me to stretch and try to be better than I am. And sometimes you hit the mark and sometimes you don't, but I think the energy is in the effort.
You were saying you don't read music.
I don't read at all. I learn everything by memory and do it all by feel and keying off other players.
That's talent, though.
No, it's lazy is what it is. I think it's a lifelong fear of actually doing anything academic. So that's ingrained in my spirit, and I kind of came up in the era of punk music. And so I sort of have a big streak of independence. As some people would call it independence, and I think some people would call it obstinance. But I just refuse to follow orders, and that's where it stems from. But
you perform with symphonies.
I do. We perform with symphonies a lot, and so I have to learn the arrangements beforehand, and it's terrifying the whole night, because if you don't play what the arrangement is, they're not going to change and go with you. So you just have to go as the best you can.
So you play and sing?
I do.
What instruments?
Just acoustic guitar. Well, I'll play electric guitar as well. Acoustic guitar, electric guitar, and sing. And I play a tiny bit of Hammond organ in the show.
And what is your band called?
We just go by my name. It's been basically, I'm a solo artist. So it's just Edwin McCain.
And you describe your style as soul.
Mm-hmm.
You said something else once, though, too. I can't remember what it was.
I'm a singer-songwriter, but it's mostly from a soul music perspective. Yeah.
And any particular kind of soul?
R&B, old school R&B, was what I was sort of brought up on, and what my passions sort of fell into when I was probably 10 years old. But out of that style of music, I was introduced to a songwriter named David Wilcox, who is much more of a wordsmith and a poet. And so somewhere the two philosophies of Wilson Pickett type soul music and James Taylor type songwriting is where I am as a musician. To try to draw comparisons, that would be the closest I could give you.
Now, how does Euphoria fit into all of this?
Well, I live here in Greenville, and I was constantly getting requests to do events and play performance for local charities. And Carl Sobosinski, who owns Sobey's and the Lazy Goat, a number of restaurants here in town, was constantly getting requests to do catering for these events.
Yeah, and that kind of gets overwhelming, doesn't it?
Well, and you can't ever meet the need. And what happens is if you do all of the events you're requested, then there's really not any reason for anybody to come out, because you're always playing. So, you know, your effectiveness goes way down. So, Carl, we were talking, and I said, why don't we do one event a year and do it together, and we'll create a board and distribute the proceeds to local charities, and then that way we can have a way to sort of organize and try to meet these request needs. And so that was the initial spark, that when we started working on it, and we were so blessed to have capable, talented people take this idea and put it into practice, because it should never be confused that Carl and I sat down in an office and started working. Like, we have an amazing staff of people around us that have helped make this a reality. And so we all use our talents. Like, Carl uses his talents to bring in the great chefs, and I've used my Rolodex to bring in the great musicians and all of the folks that I've met in 20 years of being on the road. And so everyone sort of brings their unique talents, and it's become a showcase for Greenville and Greenville in every way, not just the artists and musicians and restaurants, but the companies surrounding Greenville, our sponsors. And it really has become a full-blown community-wide event. And I think that's probably what I'm most proud of. And we didn't envision that when we first started. We just kind of envisioned, hey, we'll do this and help out some local charities. And what it's become is sort of a touchstone for the community to be able to show itself off in every fall. And we're very proud.
Now, who's coming in 2010?
Well, Sean Colvin, from my end, from the music end.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Sean Colvin is coming. She's a Grammy-winning singer-songwriter and had numerous hits.
Where's she from?
She's from Austin, Texas, Austin. And she's a very good friend. I've leaned on her and used our friendship to talk her into coming. And Maya Sharp, who's written hit songs for Bonnie Raitt and Trisha Yearwood and the Dixie Chicks. And also Chuck Cannon, who's another songwriter from Nashville, who's written songs for Toby Keith and numerous others. So we've got a pedigree of songwriters coming that I think this year sort of outweighs. I mean, this is a level year that's amazing for us. In the past, we've had Michael McDonald and Anders Osborne and Branford Marsalis, who's another friend of mine. These are all sort of Rolodex finds of mine that I've been able to recruit and enroll them in our process. So we're really, really pleased to have this year have Sean and Maya and Chuck Cannon and again Mark Rapp doing the jazz brunch on Sunday.
If you buy a VIP pass, you get to go to all these events.
Absolutely.
So come on along, people, if you're interested in soul music, or even if you're not.
Yeah, and it really, the songwriter event that we're doing Thursday.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Thursday night, the songwriter event in the Children's Theater is going to be me and Maya and Sean and Chuck. And what it'll be is in the round, and the four of us will sit on stage and sort of share stories about how songs were written and sort of the process of how we write them and then play the songs. And so it's a real insight into the life of a songwriter. And let me tell you, Sean Colvin is one of the funniest human beings I know. And her, and it's always interesting because I think people assume that we are sort of emotional and fragile, and as songwriters, we're quite the opposite is true. I say very often that making music is exactly like making sausage. You will enjoy it much more if you don't know what goes into it. But this is your invitation to come tour the sausage factory, because we're going to show you how we make it and we make the music and what it takes to distill down the ideas. And I came up with an idea of pairing musicians and chefs to draw comparisons between the art of cooking and the art of songwriting. And as it turns out, those two endeavors are exactly the same, because what you're doing is taking everyday ingredients and through your own personal experience and the alchemy that provides, creating something special and unique that is representative of your experience. And that's what chefs do, and that's what songwriters do. And
you know, Toby Keith is opening a restaurant in Pittsburgh.
I know. I heard that. I wonder what they're going to have.
Well, anyway, listeners, time is of the essence. If you want any more, you just got to come to Euphoria in Greenville.
Come on.
Edwin, thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate it.
We look forward to seeing you in September.
Okay.
Thanks, Edwin. Well, there you are. And stay with us while we take a short commercial break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Of course, On the Menu is still in Greenville, practicing to get euphoria. And in this segment, since a very important part of the whole event is wines, we start off with Richard Peck, who's in charge of the wine arrangements for Euphoria. What a big job, but he's a great man for doing it, as you'll understand when you have a chance to hear him. He'll also talk about the Lazy Goat, and we had lunch at the Lazy Goat with a chef to be reckoned with, or something like that, according to John Mariani, Victoria Moore, at the Lazy Goat, which has all Mediterranean wines, no American wines, no other foreign wines on its menu, and Devereux, a fine dining restaurant, which John Mariani also reviewed, and where we had a wonderful time at dinner, and then we talked to Chef Spencer Thompson.
Yeah, I don't
So that's what's coming up.
Yeah, I don't think that she's to be reckoned with. I think that she is an emerging talent that people want to make a point of pursuing.
Yeah, there was some category that John Mariani placed her in, and I can't remember.
Well,
chef of note or something
good.
Like that.
She's good.
Good. Right. Well, let's do the interviews.
Mm-hmm. There is, of course, as in any great event, a wine component to Euphoria, and we have the man who's in charge of that right here, Richard Peck. Welcome to On the Menu.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, but you do so much more than that. You were trying to explain to us what all you do with the Table 301 restaurant group, and I think you lost me. There's so much to it.
That's okay. Not to worry. Would a brief summary help, or where shall I start?
Yeah, why don't you do that?
Okay. Well, the short version is I take care of business development for Table 301, and that's as a result of my background, 30 years in publishing and technology. But during that time, when I was traveling a lot overseas, I always had an interest in wine from late teens for whatever reason. So I studied formally. I visited most of the wine regions around the world, from Australia and New Zealand to Europe and elsewhere. And 4 years ago, my family and I moved back to Greenville from California, which is home for us, my wife and I, because the children were here, and we kept expecting the children to move closer to us, and you see who moved. So knowing Carl Sobosinski, the owner of Table 301, through contact as I had traveled back to see the children, we eventually got together. At the time, he needed a sommelier on the floor of Restaurant O in downtown Greenville, and I served there about 2 years doing the wine buying, wine selection, wine dinners, wine tastings, wine programs. And then over a period of time, I've just picked up other duties as appropriate. So that's the short story.
Okay.
Well, today you're here as a wine man.
Today I am here as a wine man, exactly.
Now, they're also, in addition to having this as a major component of the event itself, you have different targets to reach and to achieve in the wine program. Tell us, starting with your master sommeliers.
Right. Well, it's a good question. As we look at Euphoria, there are a number of things that we do. We have master sommeliers that come in and do seminars. We have a large tasting of 200-plus wines that we do for the public. We also have winemakers that visit, so let's sort of walk through those systematically, if that would help. Would that be okay?
Yes.
It's been a tradition for each of the years that Euphoria has been held that wine's an important component. Part of that is because wine is important in the community of Greenville, surprisingly enough, for a relatively small city in South Carolina, and we can come back to that later. So, beginning at the very first year, very first event, we had three master sommeliers come to do two things. One is wine seminars specifically at and for Euphoria. So, for example, we would choose three topics, one for each of the masters, and they would do our 60 to 90 minute long seminars with wines to be tasted on a specific topic. Last year, we did food and wine pairing. We did a sort of fundamentals of wine session, and we also did wines from way down south, which doesn't mean South Carolina. It meant South America, and those were very well received. This year, we're doing wine and chocolates. That probably will be the highest turnout we've ever had.
Oh, yes.
For anything. It's one of those fascinating topics. And when I worked in the wine industry in California, anytime we offered dark red wine and dark chocolates, it was magic.
Yeah.
So we'll be doing that this year. We're also doing food and wine pairing again this year because it was so popular last year. And it's something a lot of people have questions about. And then the third session this year will be Mediterranean magic. There's a wonderful restaurant here in town called The Lazy Goat that has done a very courageous thing.
Well, we just had lunch, right?
Oh, good, 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 good. Well, you saw the wine list then. Not a single American wine on the list. That takes courage. So we think this will be fun for the people that enjoy the goat and are expecting to learn more about Mediterranean wine.
And you have the dinners?
We do have the dinners. As the masters and the winemakers and wine celebrities come into town for the event, we use them in various ways. The masters will be doing the seminars we just talked about. In addition, the sponsors and most enthusiastic attenders, the VIPs that purchase dinner tickets and grand tasting tickets and, how should I say, take advantage of all of the events at Euphoria. There are dinners in the various restaurants around town because Euphoria is a Greenville event. It's not just a Table 301 event, despite the fact that's where I'm from. And so there's the opportunity then for you or me or, well, your celebrities, but for somebody in the local community to actually sit down and enjoy a five-course meal with Wayne Belding or Laura Williamson or Brian Cronin, these incredibly accomplished sommeliers, and talk just as we're talking now.
In each of those cases, does a restaurant pair up with a winery?
In many of those cases, the restaurant pairs up with the winery. We work with a wholesaler who provides much of the wine, and then the wholesaler and the restaurants and the organizers of Euphoria kind of team up to determine what wines, what winemaker or master sommelier, and what restaurant provides the best combination.
Now, do you know anybody who's specifically coming this year?
This year, in addition to the masters, I don't yet.
Okay.
One of the challenges in
planning. So we'll be announcing that as that information becomes available on the website.
Exactly. Well, no, I was just going to say one of the challenges for getting the actual winemakers, given the date of this event, is it's
harvest.
Right in the midst of harvest. You guessed it. You were very fast. So we often will get, for example, the head of hospitality at one of the wineries or one of the owners, one of the principals, when the winemakers are tied up.
So just to remind your listeners, there'll be a news item about that in due course, closer
yes.
to the time when Richard's in a position where he can give that information out.
Exactly. We do know the masters, and I think I mentioned them earlier for this
yes.
year, but the winemakers will announce as it gets.
Now, I'm going to go back a little bit here to you sort of rush through this new concept of why wine is so important in Greenville. Could we talk a little bit about why you say that?
I'd be happy to. Greenville is kind of a unique place. Coming from California, which is wine country, to arrive in a city that has 60,000 within the city limits and only about 600,000 in the MSA, the Metropolitan Statistical Area, it's not a big place, and it's certainly not a place renowned for winemaking and wine enthusiasm, or at least that would be the preconception. What I found, even before Table 301 and I and others began to do more efforts to do wine education, for example, and plan events, is that Greenville, for whatever reason, has always had a passion for wine. In the late 90s, when Sobey's Restaurant on Main Street was one of the first fine dining restaurants to open downtown, Walter Shug, who's now retired, but his son Axel is still running Shug Winer in Sonoma, said that South Carolina was one of their principal markets. So as early as that, people here seem to have a sort of innate passion for wine. Since that time, I think it's been the work of a lot of people who love wine. Carl Sobosinski, for example, always, when he opened Sobey's in November 1997 from the beginning, said it's food and wine. It's not just food. And so there's been an emphasis on wine dinners and wine education for consumers. Then, speaking just for the Table 301 organization, we do quite a lot of wine education, both for our guests but also for our servers. And so I'm a certified wine educator in the Society of Wine Educators, and one of my responsibilities is to take care of the server staff and be sure that they're up to snuff and can really provide a memorable wine experience, not just, oh, here's your bottle.
Well, wow. you can bet, listeners, that Euphoria 2010 is going to be just another one of those wonderful wine experiences. So stay tuned for further information about what it means. And remember to get yourself organized to come down and meet us and Richard in Greenville at the end of September.
We look forward to it.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
You know, I'm not sure if I can recall everything we've had for lunch, but Chef de Cuisine, Victoria Ann Moore, who we can call Vicky Moore, really did us proud here, serving the things that she loved and things that she'd asked us about that we loved too. Welcome to On the Menu, Vicky.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, this restaurant is a Mediterranean restaurant. You are from Alabama? And so you were a transplant to Greenville.
Ma'am.
But you're still Southern.
Yes, ma'am.
And of course it's right on the Mediterranean.
And it's right on the Mediterranean. How did we get to the Mediterranean?
Through a lot of passion and homework and research and just a love for cooking.
Okay, so but the Mediterranean flavors are what inspire you.
Yes. Uh-huh,
and that's not just like Italy, Spain. It's everything because we had the Moroccan lamb. And
yes, ma'am. We try to – it's some menu items can be very loosely based, but others can be very traditional. I did a lot of homework and research on countries, even the Middle East, Tunisia, you know, other places in Africa.
Yeah, you do a lot of research into these different cuisines.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, I've read about this. You did an Easter Island dinner?
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't know that. Well, I'm sure they must eat in Easter Island, but I didn't know they had a cuisine.
A lot of it is very similar to Hawaiian. Like there, it's Polynesian. There's Asian influence, but then you also definitely have a South American influence as well. We on Thursdays or every Thursday, we like to do a little a smaller features menu that we concentrate in one area of the world, and sometimes we like to go really far out there and go to places like Easter Island.
Now, this restaurant, the Lazy Goat, is remarkable for its setting. Tell us where we are.
We are right next to the Reedy River in downtown Greenville, South Carolina. And
we're looking out these wonderful windows at the river as it sort of meanders past.
Yes. And we do have a lot of water features on the patio and stuff like that, where we hope the guests can kind of feel like they are somewhere in the Mediterranean while they're dining with us.
Then that makes sense, too. We're also having this huge meeting of pigeons over in that building, which is for private functions, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, the pigeons are getting ready to fight the ducks.
Right. So now we sort of gave you the freedom to service things that you really love. Can you just go over just a few things that we had? Because we had so many things.
Okay.
Were you surprised we ate it all?
Well, I did hold back on my portion size because I wanted the two of you to get the maximum flavor tour of the Mediterranean. But I believe we started off with the grilled calamari, and I really, really, really love that dish.
It's not your usual grilled calamari. It's different.
Right. I play around with it. I like to keep the calamari grilled. A lot of people do fry their calamari, which is perfectly all right with me. I love fried calamari, too. But just to try and keep in tradition with the Mediterranean, I offer it grilled, and I do my version of a romesco sauce with aji dulce peppers, which is more of a tropical pepper, but I grow them myself, but I also source them here locally, and they're just amazing. But I make this great romesco sauce with the peppers and Marcona almonds, and a lot of Spanish influence in it. There's a fiery pickled pepper salad with fresh picked mint on top of that.
Yeah, the mint really does wonders, because I took a big bite of the peppers, and I welcomed the mint, so it was very refreshing as a note. And we had roasted mussels and chorizo and Moroccan lamb, and then we had the braised octopus with shaved fennel and arugula. Tell us about this wonderful fish dish that we had.
The Mediterranean. It's a crispy Mediterranean.
Branzini.
Branzini is how we have it on the menu, and Mr. Mariani did correct us
it's
on
branzino,
that.
Branzino, yeah.
Branzino. We still have not changed it just because.
You didn't want it?
Well, you know, we like to keep it Southern here, and that's very much a Southern mistake to mispronounce something. But anyway, the branzini, I preserve my own lemons here in-house, and we completely remove the inner workings of the skeleton from the whole fish, and we stuff it with preserved lemons and shaved fennel and make a crispy frying batter, flash fry it, and then we serve it on a warm salad of sautéed fennel, arugula, cipollini onions, crushed fingerling potatoes, and kind of season that with charmoula.
And I love charmoula.
Thank you.
And the pork belly was gorgeous also.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, it was all gorgeous, let's be honest. You have been here for how long?
Just over 3 years.
Okay. And you've already been actually, Mariani has listed you as a breakout or break. Is it, what's it called? Breakout talent.
I mean, breakout chef to watch.
Yeah, that one. And you're young. You're early 30s.
Yes, ma'am.
And so yeah, I mean, so this is a place that people are certainly going to want to catch you while you're available here, now, don't you think?
No, let's not close before, after you answer that question, let's bridge to euphoria.
I was just going to say that. Because
that's one of the reasons we're here.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if you've been here 3 years, you've been through three, at least, euphorias.
Yes, ma'am.
And how do you interact with this event, and what does it mean to you?
The Euphoria event is by far my most favorite time of year here in Greenville. It is the most tiring weekend, but definitely worth it. It's most tiring for all the chefs involved and all the restaurant staff involved, because it is early morning to late at night, but we have a great time. We get to collaborate with some pretty famous chefs.
Yeah, now you were paired up with a big-time celebrity chef.
Chef Brian Voltaggio, and this will be our second meeting, and I'm very excited to get to work with him again. He always brings fresh inspiration and influence to the kitchen here.
Have you already done a menu with him?
We are in the process of trying to come up with it right now. I have a few ideas. He has a few ideas, and we're just going to collaborate to see what works best for both of us and go from there.
This has been a pleasure for us. We love your food. We love the passion you have for your food.
Thank you
so much. We'll come back tomorrow.
We're certainly going to see you in a couple of months and find out what you and Brian finally did come up with.
Great. I can't wait. I'm very excited.
Vicki, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We've just had this wonderful dinner at Devereaux in Greenville, South Carolina. And I want to thank our next up guest for a wonderful experience. Spencer, it was fabulous. I mean, starting with that wonderful cold soup with the crab stuff. Anyhow, this is supposed to be talking, actually, about euphoria, which is something you're going to have to define. But I want to just announce again that we're talking to Spencer, Chef Spencer Thompson, who is the executive chef at Devereaux. And tell us, first of all, why don't you tell us what was in that soup? Let's start with that.
What was the chilled heirloom tomato gazpacho?
Yes.
We did a little pinky toe and lobster salad.
The pinky toe and lobster salad that sent me off into the stratosphere. Loved it. Thank you.
And it's just garnished with all the traditional gazpacho's ingredients. We take all the water from the ingredients, so there's no, that gives you that clear liquid. And then we take and dice all the garniture that would go in it, the cucumbers, the tomatoes, the peppers, all that, and then we decorate around.
Do a whole bunch of stuff. We also had that wonderful beef rib dish that was
sous-vide
for, 48 hours or something?
Yes, ma'am. They're cooked in a circulator for 48 hours at 57.3 degrees Celsius. Just enough temperature to get them cooked. So they come out a little bit red so they're not braised, but none of the fat actually dissolves out of the cuts of meat, so they're just richer.
Here we are in Greenville, South Carolina, and, I mean, it's been getting some attention lately, but people might not know how sophisticated the dining scene his ear, and you said, actually, that this euphoria event that we're really interested in, that it has actually benefited everybody in this city, all the chefs. Tell us how it's benefited you.
Well, euphoria has been pretty amazing for us here at Devereaux in particular. Just everybody in town really gets an opportunity to work with someone they haven't been, but we've been extraordinarily lucky to have just some amazing chefs come in and work here. Year one, it was actually called Southern Exposure, and they have changed the name since to Euphoria, but we got to work with Thomas Keller and a bunch of the chefs from Bouchon, and that was year one. So that was just a really amazing experience for us to be in Greenville, South Carolina, like you said, and have arguably the greatest American chef come and work here in the restaurant was just an amazing opportunity, not only to pick his brain and see the different types of food that they were doing, but an opportunity to work with himself plus five of his other chefs, just an amazing opportunity. And then the second year when they changed the name to Euphoria, my partner and I, Steven, had the opportunity to bring back some of our mentors and give them the opportunity to work with us again. And so we just, just a really, really fun time having them back, getting to work with your old mentors, seeing what they're doing new. They get a chance to see what you're doing. Just a, you know, a really, really fun, fun, festive time was year two.
And you're now extended to France with
That's correct. Year three, we had the opportunity to work with Guy Savoie. He had two of his chefs come in for a week before the event and get everything ready. So the opportunity to prep all the ingredients, work with all these amazing ingredients. Some to most of the ingredients were flown in directly from France, French sea bass, the veal loins, all the truffles. For instance, one of the dishes they did was his world-famous artichoke soup with the mushroom duxelle brioche with the truffle butter, which is something any other time in my life I would probably not get to try unless you went to France. Yeah. But right here in the restaurant served was that, and that was just one of his dishes. He did a lot of his signature dishes.
Now, he brought in ingredients from France, but your trademark is quite the opposite.
Yes, is bringing in ingredients from the area here.
Yeah, but tell us about it. I mean, my favorite thing this whole night was that little zucchini vegetable packet that was the fabulous.
The play on lasagna with no pasta.
Yeah, but I mean, every single vegetable was so flavorful, I could have just eaten it the whole night.
Well, we're real fortunate here in South Carolina with the weather. We're not too close to the coast, so there's not a whole lot of heat. It's a great area for growing. And we work real closely with about five or six different farmers from the area, three in particular, Chris from Bioway Farms, Chris Sermons, Jeff Isbell with Izzy's Heirlooms, and those were the heirloom tomatoes you had in the gazpacho. He also does the heirloom squash, which is the pasta, so to speak, on the lasagna. And then Terry Goldenstar, who does a lot of lettuces and microgreens in the area. So not only are we fortunate enough to have these things in the area so that they're super fresh, super flavorful, but we get to work with them on what type of blend of micros we would like or what varieties we would like in particular. And with talking with him, we pretty much get to pick and choose what we want, and we don't have to have things flown in.
So this becomes a big, big world-class event.
Absolutely.
And you were actually, we sort of cut it off, but you were actually now connected with Guy Savoie, and you are going to go for a month and cook in his flagship kitchen, which is like, has to be wonderful.
I'm very excited about it. I don't know if I would use the term cook yet. We'll have to see when I get there. Maybe more like peeling or...
No, you're too far advanced with that.
But I'm very excited, yes. For the entire month of November, I will be staying in Paris and working at the flagship Guy Savoie restaurant.
Well, one last word. First of all, listeners, you need to come to Euphoria, and you'll find all the information on our website. Secondly, when you're in Greenville, you really need to come and meet this remarkable chef and eat at Devereaux, which, I mean, I could have four more meals here right on top of each other. I loved it so much.
Well, we encourage that type of behavior. But thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. And here we'll pause one more time.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Here we are again. We have two more interesting interviews coming up.
And you're wondering why I put these together, aren't you?
I'll
explain. Aside from the fact that both chefs are participating, of course, in Euphoria, they're both big farm-to-table guys.
Oh yeah,
major farm-to-table guys in an area of the country which is fortunately blessed for farming, and both of them know that by as much locally as they can. So first up, Joe Clark from American Grocery Restaurant. He says, just so people know, it's a restaurant, not a grocery store. And a fascinating young man called Sean Garcia, who's a several generation South Carolinian who learned to cook from his grandmother and his great-grandmother. And talks about that as well. So a couple of very interesting fellows that you'll want to catch up with, that we caught up with just to talk to. We haven't been to their restaurants yet, but you can bet we're going to next time we're in Greenville in September.
I always love meeting people who come from a wide range of background experiences and end up in the kitchen, because a lot of people do that. Certainly Joe Clark, that's Clark with an E,
Correct.
Chef owner of the American Grocery?
American Grocery Restaurant. We like to have the restaurant in there so people don't get confused.
Well, because I was confused. I didn't know if it was a gourmet shop or what it was. So it is American Grocery Restaurant.
Correct.
And, of course, Greedville. And, Joe, you even worked in the film industry before you ended up here, but you have cooking in your blood, very deeply in your blood from your whole family, right?
Correct. My inspiration came from my grandmother. She had a small farm, as we were discussing earlier, and from everything from putting up every part of the pig to harvesting her tomatoes and cantaloupes and corn, which sort of that those three around here this time of year are sacred, and we're on the table at every meal. And you see that, and then, you know, you look 20 years later and you can't find a decent tomato in the grocery store. You have to go to farmers markets or grow them yourself. And that's the inspiration for what we do at American Grocery anyway, is just source the best products we possibly can. If we can get them right here in our backyard, that's what we do.
And what do you do, the least amount to them? I mean, what is your style like?
Absolutely.
Or your menu like?
Well, when you have a beautiful ingredient like that, my approach has always been less is more. And I think if you don't bury the flavors of the ingredient, you just put them with things that they like to be with and let them speak for themselves, I think that simplistic approach really ends up serving you a lot better than clouding it with a bunch of heavy sauces and all this other elaborate stuff.
Yeah, well, have you always been this way? This is very au courant. You're right on trend here. But have you always had this attitude?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think another thing for us is if you can make it, you make it. You don't stocks, obviously, and doughs and everything. I mean, it's about old, it's unfortunate, but an old school style of thinking. You know, if your grandmother's in there making biscuits every morning, and that's sort of the work ethic I came from, and I apply that in the kitchen, and we apply it at the restaurant. And if we can use the fresh juice at the bar and all that, that's what you should be doing.
So now you run the kitchen, and your wife does front of the house, and she's also the wine director.
Correct. Right? She's a sommelier.
And what is the wine program like? I mean, do you have any favorite wine regions?
We have many favorite wine regions. We are big wine fans. But her approach is similar. She likes to source from smaller producers, small growers, small case production.
If you can get them.
Absolutely,
you know.
Absolutely.
It's not that easy to get.
It's not. And that's what makes it unique, is having a case of this wine that is only, you know, they only make 1,200 cases of. And that's pretty unique. And when it's gone, it's gone. And so we really try to focus on that, even all the way to small champagne growers and everything like that. It's about being a little bit more unique than just having a massive wine list, because our wine list isn't huge, but it's focused.
Okay. Now, who goes to your restaurant? What does it look
like? What does the restaurant look like, or what does my clientele look like?
Both.
Well, it's we seat about 52, and it's a small, very warm, craftsman-style dining room.
Great.
We want it to be very inviting to people to come in and have a nice meal. And it's not as big as a lot of the restaurants here in downtown Greenville, but we kind of like it like that. We like to be a little bit we're down in the West End, so we're kind of off the beaten path a little bit. And I think it's a place that people like to come and just have a nice meal where they feel like they're sort of the only ones that know about it, which, of course, is not the case.
Yeah.
But I think it feels like
that. Oh, I was going to say.
For Euphoria, you're going to have a real fun experience, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was going to say you're a big supporter of Euphoria, and I wanted to know why.
Well, why not? It's it's just like any other town. Like Charleston has the Charleston Food and Wine Festival. You know, Carl and Edwin put this together a few years ago, and actually, oddly enough, when Darlene and I were looking to decide where we would locate here in the South, we had already, you know, traveled around to several cities. We were at what used to be called Southern Exposure, now called Euphoria, at the Taste of the South event, of course, not in the restaurant at the time, and decided at that event that this was where we were going to locate. And I think that says a lot about the growth of this city, and the festival was very exciting to us, for us to see that in Greenville, and because I remember when it was a block, was all downtown really was. And that every year it's gotten better, and I've got to see that sort of arc. And it's exciting to be a part of it, because every year I think we all, you know, we plan it, and then we get together afterwards and talk about how we can make it better next year. And I think every year it does get better. And, you know, that would be my question, is why wouldn't you want to be a part of something like that?
And one of our favorite people is going to be your cooking companion.
Yes.
Mike Lather.
Mike Lather.
Who's a fake Southerner, but he does a good job of it.
He does do a good job of it. And I'm looking forward to it. I don't know Mike as well as I would like to, based on, I know of him, and I know his journey.
He's really nice. Really nice guy.
Well, and I got to actually spend a little bit of time with him at Cochon 555 in Atlanta, the event this year that he did. And we didn't get to talk too much because he was very busy doing his thing. But I'm looking forward to it because I know that this is, you know, the sourcing local thing before it was a trendy thing to do was something that he championed quite aggressively. And that I'm excited about because I think our styles are very similar. And I think that the meal will be a really fun experience.
And you listeners, you better get your reservation in early because on the menu is already ahead of you in the queue. And lots of other people will be too. And Joe will look forward to seeing you then and speaking to you about what it was like and what you cooked and all that kind of good stuff.
I'm very excited about it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe. Well, I'm really delighted to have a chance to talk to you, Sean Garcia. Spelled A-U-N, not S-E-A-N, not S-H-A-W-N. You are the chef de cuisine of Sobeys.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're renowned for having learned cooking and getting your passion for cooking from your mother.
Correct. My mother and
grandmother.
My grandmother and my great-grandmother.
And your great-grandmother as well. And you also are into growing things. You have all the right attributes of today's top-notch chefs. You believe in local, sustainable, natural, anything else? Seasonal.
Really just definitely seasonal. Developing our menus by what we plant, not by what the purveyors can provide. And planting menus earlier in the growing season to what, you know, we're planting in spring what we're going to have for summer and then summer what we're going to have in fall. And letting the season actually direct the menu direction. I feel that's the way to eat, you know, that you shouldn't have a tomato in January, that you should have it in July, August. A peach should be beautiful in July.
Oh, and aren't they beautiful here right now? Ooh.
The smell of them is just so overpowering that, you know, it just screams southern summer, sultry, humidity, and all the things that make the South great.
Uh-huh.
So your
cuisine is essentially a modernized Southern style, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So all your great-grandmother cooked Southern style?
Oh, definitely. I am Southern true and true and very proud of it to my roots. My grandmother, great-grandmother, excuse me, was the oldest of 19 kids. And being the oldest in a family of that size, you were very familiar with cooking for large groups and taking care of the smaller kids. And, you know, we instilled in me a natural of taking care of people. And that's why I've really, being a chef and taking care of the guests, going above and beyond, has just been second nature to me.
Now, how big is this garden that everybody talks about?
Some people call it garden. Some people call it a mini farm. It's roughly planted about 7 to 8 acres.
That's big.
I have a compact to mid-sized tractor that I use to cultivate, plant, till, and plow. So it's a little more, roughly right now we have 12 to 1400 heirloom tomato plants. So that kind of gives you a size of
That's incredible.
We planted some Stonewall's evergreen corn that dates back to 1884, and it's an old variety we got from Seed Savers in Iowa. We're planting a lot of stuff that some people are very, you know, not very familiar with, but you couldn't go out and buy at a farmer's market, or you couldn't source from a purveyor, or even some of the other farmers, that I source stuff that I thought would be interesting, and I like to have ingredients that have stories.
Yeah, we just bought at a farmer's market in Greenwood. It was a wonderful story the farmer told. It was purple okra, and he claims the seed came from Africa.
Oh, definitely. That's one thing that we're very blessed with, that all the ingredients and culture that came over during a bad part of our history in North America,
right,
and America, but we've been lucky to have okra and sweet potatoes and certain varieties of yams and other techniques that the South wouldn't have had if, you know, we'd had to go through those harsh and triumph times. But okra is one that I'm very excited about and very passionate about.
So. We grill it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okra anyway is fine with me.
That's exactly how I cooked it the other night. I was just thinking of the terrible thing. If all these things hadn't come over, the South might have been brought up on British cooking, and then where would you have been?
But I really think that's really what's woven the South into what it is, the different hardships and triumphs that we've had to face and overcome. So I feel that a lot of our cuisine is built with deep roots and whatnot.
Sean, you are not only excited about growing things, you're also very excited about preserving them. Tell us what gets you excited.
When you have a harvest come in and then you've got more tomatoes than you know what to do with, or you have more pears or peaches that, you know, you want to put them up, and, you know, that's slogan or saying that's kind of gone by the wayside of putting them up, meaning canning for, you know, the winter. And
your family.
Oh, definitely. We were big canners.
Tell us about your granny and her
One of my grandmother's recipes that I was very excited to try and use, I called my grandmother up and said, hey, you know, I want to make these pear preserves that Granny made. And she's like, well, she hesitates on the phone. And I'm like, well, why, what's the problem? She's like, I'll be over. I'll have to show you. So, you know, we did this together. We canned. It's a memory that, you know, I'll have forever that we had this time together. And it wasn't, oh, it's 5-10 minutes. It was by sight and kind of by feel that, okay, now, okay, it's ready now. It's ready to can. You know, you smell it, you see it. You know, it's one of those that you can't write down. It's more of an oral history. And something like that, that gets me really excited to have that and to pass that on to my kid, that that's something that could have been lost if I hadn't have learned how to do it. Hopefully they'll pass it on. It'd be something that, you know, we'll have in our history. And
do you have animals too?
I don't yet. I'd like to have a couple pigs and maybe I'd love to have some old breeds of chickens.
Oh, so, they're but, pretty too.
I love the Americanas and the old variety of Rhode Island Red.
Oh yeah, they're pretty too.
Where you get the eggs and they're just so dark and just the yolk is so bright like the sunshine, just beating, you know. That stuff, it gets me really excited, you know, because, you know, you're getting an egg that's still warm. And then you're doing some eggs is one of the most versatile things that you can make. Numerous dishes from hollandaise to poaching to
have you
sabayon.
Seen that book? There's a book of just called Egg, and it's all chefs with their egg recipes.
I haven't, but it looks it sounds good. Very interesting. Yeah.
Now let's transition to Euphoria. What does Euphoria mean led on top of this show?
Euphoria is one of my favorite times of the year that we bring in some chefs from the South and from other reaches to take part in a benefit that I look at is very essential to the upstate of South Carolina because of the proceeds going to certain charities and also getting a good time to kind of take a step back and just mingle with fellow chefs that all kind of have the same vision.
Yeah, chefs love that.
You know, what are you guys doing in Virginia? What are you guys doing down in Florida or, you know, Atlanta? You know, kind of a good time for us to just throw things around and, hey, have you tried this? Hey, I haven't tried that. You know, I've looked up sometimes. I'm a seed saver, so I'll end up passing on some seeds of something I've saved from last year. Hey, I've been waiting to see you. Here's this. And you see some familiar faces and you make new friends as well.
Yeah, you've had some pretty big deal visitors in the past, like Guy Savoy from all the way from Paris.
Definitely. And we've had Thomas Keller, Frank Stitt.
Frank's a good guy.
Oh, he is. And
anybody special you can think of who's coming this year that you're looking forward to meeting?
This year that we're working with one of the Vitaggio brothers from Bolt up in Maryland.
Yeah. Well, he's been here before,
he
right?
He did. He was here 2 years ago before he became a sensation on Top
Chef.
Yeah,
right.
And there's some stories that's funny, but we won't talk about those. And this year I'm excited to work with the chef from Voice. He and I kind of go back to the McCrady days when he was in McCrady's.
Right.
I was going to go stage, but you know, it was a long way for me to travel from the upstate down to Charleston, and we just never could get things working out. So, Chef Kramer and I, we're going to come up with a nice meal to serve in the loft and do about 30 people and to kind of have a dinner that's, you know, bringing both of our styles of cooking to one and be in sync with each other.
Well, listeners, you're not going to want to miss that.
I want to mention his hat. Because his hat reads, "Make cornbread, not war."
That sounds like a great way to finish up. Sean, we'll look forward to seeing you in September. And listeners, you should look forward to seeing Sean in September too.
Thank you very much.
Good to meet you.
Well, listeners, that's it for another week. We'll hope to see you same time, same place next week. And, of course, in Greenville, South Carolina, at the end of September for Euphoria. So what do we say, sweetheart?
Bye-bye.